Yeah, the services on Radio 3 and Live It Up, High Tide. Maurice Misolowski in St Kilda in Melbs. How are you?
I'm living it up. You're back, Phil.
I am indeed, yeah. I came at him with some topics this morning. He's like, done that with James. All right, then. So we better BS something else. Yes, anyway, Maurice, great to talk with you.
I still love you,
Phil. What's been going on your end, then? Have you written anything groovy recently?
Yeah. There's lots of stuff at the blog still, having this writing spurt of mine.
Yeah.
Talked a lot about the changing workforce of tomorrow. We've done that. We've talked about that in the past before.
Yeah, well, that's a massive topic with so many different changes.
Yeah, it is. And what I've been writing about particularly is the notion of what artificial intelligence will or won't do for humans in the workforce and the way that we need to restructure it. Because for me, and I'm doing a couple of keynotes on that in the next few weeks, it's one of my I've talked about it for a decade or more.
It's the topic, isn't it, really?
Exactly. I've rebuilt it into the topic, where I talk about the notion that we no longer have a workforce, we have a task force.
Ah.
And that's the way we need to look at what we do in the future.
Yeah.
That the tasks we do need to be done, but some of them could be done by humans, lots will, and some of those humans will be permanent employees, some will be part-time, some will be working remotely and just come in for their specific talents.
Yep.
Others will be done by technology, like our computers and our robots. And then we have the third rung of things that will do tasks for us, and that's all of these new apps and all this new artificial intelligence and what that becomes. So our tasks now can be done by a whole range of people and things, and we need to ponder which one is the most appropriate.
For another day, Maurice, but I do wonder which element of society will actually be out of work.
It's like all of work when it evolves. There's no good response to it, because some people are going to be out of work. But what we're finding already, and this is, this is the half glass full stuff.
Sure.
It just doesn't help the people at the other end who are losing their jobs normally. But there are so many new jobs around now with titles that have just never been seen and never been needed.
Mm.
One of the biggest jobs at the moment that you can literally get 100K plus, and we're talking US if you can prove you can do it, is a prompt engineer.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
What's a prompt engineer?
Yeah, I'm prompting.
And that's exactly what you should say, what everybody else should say, because we've never heard of such a thing. I mean, can you imagine a child coming home and saying, I want to be a prompt engineer when I grow up?
Well,
that would get you a clip over the ears. But what it is this, that with artificial intelligence, what we're starting to need to do is to talk to it. We're starting to need to be able to tell it what we exactly want.
Yeah.
And the better, the more erudite we can be, the more specific we can be about prompting for that, the better the responses are. And it's quite an intricate thing to do. And somebody that has that skill set, that is able to, with plain English, be able to express what's required and get artificial intelligence, all of its different formats, to do what's needed of it, is that kind of person. And
isn't it funny, Maurice, how AI seems to be a combination of, a thick kid and a brilliant invention? Because you really have to lay it out so logically and on a plate for this thing, don't you?
Yeah, it absolutely is. But we're early days.
Yeah.
It really is about what its grandparents will be. We don't know. We're at ChatGPT-4 now, and there are other brands of it, but just to stay with ChatGPT.
Yeah.
We know that ChatGPT-5 is on the drawing boards and has been for a while now, and we don't know when it's going to come out. There were talks it would come out this year. The makers of it put out a press release 10 days ago to say it ain't coming out this year and maybe not even till the end of next year. And we don't know if that's a ploy or if it's true or not, but they've said it's not coming out in the imminent future. But what they did say was that when it comes out, it will be completely different. It will be not so much about typing. It will be very much about using multimodality, which means speaking to it, pointing things at it, showing it pictures, showing it video.
Does this mean even more advanced tablets and
even more advanced ways of inputting information?
Yeah.
I'm not sure about output, because we're still working on that and we don't know. But inputting, in other words, making it easier for you and I to be able to engage with this thing, is what they're saying it will do on steroids, and completely different. And again, don't know what that means, and that's where I think the marketing tease comes into it. But they've said it will be a completely different experience to anything we've seen so far.
Seems to be like tarting up the learning process.
Yeah, and it is. And it's new, and it's, you know, it's 2 years old in the marketplace. It's 40 years old in science and research labs and the rest of it. It's got a long, long way to go. But the thing that we know is that we're talking about it. In 2 years, we're talking about it. And it has become a thing for everybody. Its uptake was much quicker than the PC, invariably quicker than the internet. It took about 10 years for most people to get on. So there are lots of people. I think the figure is about 70% of people that are on the internet and using PCs regularly have trialed it. Not necessarily using it, but they've trialed it, played with it, done something with it. And that's in 2 years. That's phenomenal.
Sort of takes us on to the other couple of bits and pieces we wanted to get into today. If you have an iPhone 1, go and dig it out. We'll get to that in a second. Yeah. I want to go back 22 years. It just caught my attention that Steve Fossett went round the world in a balloon in 2002. Now, add to that that we have really got much more hot air. I don't know what it's like in Aussie because I know it's wintertime, but here it's verging on heatwave and in many other places too. So is this hot air, is a crisis being turned into an opportunity in terms of travel?
Well, I don't think it was much of a topic when he was around. We just don't talk about it. So, yeah. But you're right. I mean, we're definitely, there is much, much conversation going on about the changing weather patterns and heat and cold and what that's going to do
to
certain
use.
Geographic areas, to farming, to all sorts of things. And they're worthwhile conversations. We do need to have them. There are definitely changes on the horizon. This Fossett thing is fascinating, as is the iPhone that we'll come back to, because they both point at the same sort of thing, and that is that they're ridiculous. Before they're done. They're ridiculous.
They're follies.
I mean, why would you? Who's going to use it? You know, exactly. They're a folly. And it's stupid. And stop wasting your time and go back and do something real was really what was said about both of these things. He had had six attempts. I mean, I'm really dredging my memory, but I think from memory he had six attempts at doing this.
Yep.
And like a stubborn child, in the best sense of it,
like
just
an AI.
Wouldn't give up. I mean, he had lots and lots of money, lots and lots of time, and this was a passion project. So he could afford not to give up, but he didn't. And he kept being told, of course, you know, after attempt one and two and three and four, you can imagine. I assume even his mother told him that she loves him, but just give up and find another dream. But he didn't. He persevered at it, and eventually he managed to single-handedly, in a hot air balloon, quite a large one, six stories tall, he managed to navigate the world. The first time one of the attempts he did, I think he came up against some strange happenings in one of the islands. Somebody, he was attacked or something. He ran out of oxygen. He ran out of all kinds of things. And the sixth attempt basically learnt all that learning, put it together and said, I'm going for it, and he did. I'm reading now from one of the press releases. This is a bit I love, talk about old technology being new. So he's just landed. It's 2002.
Yep.
He's just come back into Australia because he left from Western Australia, went around the world and came back on the eastern coast of Australia. So he's flying in his balloon, 6 hours to land, but he's made the effort.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, as an official fax from Fossett's capsule rolled into the mission control at Washington University, applause broke out and the team members exchanged hugs.
An official fax.
He had a fax machine in his hot air balloon. I mean, you've got to love it.
Absolutely brilliant. But, you know, seriously, the hot air thing, I mean, that's what makes stuff rise. Have you read anything about saying, well, this isn't good and it's happening, but we should make the most of it for another reason?
Well, we have to make the most of it anyway, and that's air travel. So we're certainly not travelling less. There was lots of conversations about how we would protest and we would not get on planes after, especially after COVID.
Mm.
We'd learnt our lesson, and because the Earth didn't need us to pollute it anymore, we would stay where we were. None of that's truthful. We've never flown more, literally. We've never flown more as we do at the moment on this planet. And that's going to only increase over the next decade. So we are doing terrible things to our atmosphere high up, and we don't look like we're going to desist. So what is happening is that a lot of the plane manufacturers, engine manufacturers, a lot of people who aren't that but want to be, you know, new people on the block who are trying to see if they can do something different, are all having a crack at how we might make flight different, how we might have different engines, different cabins, different sorts of aeroplanes, hot air balloons, all sorts of things that will not do the damage to Earth that what we're currently doing does, and also will allow us to keep flying.
What do you think about the hydrogen discussion?
I think it's wonderful. I think hydrogen is something that we overlooked. I know that the Zeppelin kind of blew up. And that wasn't a great thing, but that was in the 1940s. I mean, we've got to forgive it by now, yeah?
Mm.
And we've learned a lot, so we should go back and have a look at whether that makes sense.
Yeah.
But And that's the problem. Often if there is this catastrophic, and it was catastrophic, it was terrible, nothing good to be said, we just kind of walk away from it. We've done the same with nuclear energy, especially in Australia. We hearken back to what was a terrible circumstance where it blew up.
But I think there's no middle ground with some of these technologies. You're either in one piece or you're destroyed.
Yeah, absolutely. But it doesn't mean that we haven't learned. And we certainly don't want to go through the same problem again. We certainly don't want to go back until we're almost sure that we're not going to cause harm again. Mm. But to your point, sometimes the old technologies are old, but they've been looked at for a long time and we just understand them better. And I think hydrogen's one of those.
Yeah, I'm
actually disappointed that we don't have more effort with hydrogen motor vehicles. I think that would be something we should be looking at too.
There's a lot of chatter about that.
There is, but not a lot of work being done because we've gone from fossil fuels to electric vehicles. We've really gone single-minded. And that always concerns me, that we think we've found the panacea and we haven't. Oh. Electric vehicles are good and they can be one part of this answer, but they're not the answer because nothing is. It's a mixture of all kinds of stuff.
Totally random electric vehicle question for you. I saw some article the other day about Germany having a batterified lane in their autobahns.
Yes. Now, that hasn't been done before, but the concept's not new. So there was a time, and I used to show the video about 15 years or so ago, where exactly as you've just said, what they did was, but this was done by solar and by kinetic energy.
Right.
So kinetic energy is where, like the old clocks, the old watches we used to have, the motion actually creates more motion. And the car would drive over the top of this part of the road, and it would create the kinetic energy.
It's not electrified. It's not like a train track.
No, it is. The one you're describing is, but that's the evolution of it.
Okay.
So that old one used to charge and store energy inside the car, and they were talking about building freeways. China was actually very buoyant on this for quite a while, building freeways that the cars, by driving on them, would actually energize themselves.
Makes
Solar
sense.
Was the second way I've seen that done, and this is now being trialled as well, where these electric roads, in other words, by driving on it, your car connects to it, like a bumper car type thing, has a connection to the car, to the road, I should say, and it pulls up the energy from that. It's all interesting stuff, and we should be looking at all of it. Whether it's usable, we don't know yet.
But the safety layman question is the obvious one.
And it is an obvious one. I would hope that they're working on that and for it to be safe.
Yeah.
I know that the kinetic and the solar ones certainly met all of the requirements of safety. In fact, I know one of the road manufacturers in Australia looked at it quite earnestly.
Mm.
The problem was not the road, not the technology. It was the governments and the insurance companies and everybody else who just couldn't stomach it. And the infrastructure of actually building it, Phil, would be tremendous. It's billions of dollars to change over.
Yeah. Well, listen, just to wrap this one up. So bearing in mind global warming, is elemental power going to feature more, do you think, in the future?
I think it should, again, as part of the mix. So I think we definitely need to look at it and its possibilities. But going back to the other point, I think everything should be on the table.
Yeah.
Everything. I mean, every kind of energy that we can think of and new ones. You know, there's energy in water. I mean, there's energy in the air. There's energy, solar energy, I think, is a great one, but not in the way that we currently do it. There are some very interesting projects going on. Our friend Musk is doing one of them where they believe they'll be able to draw, so they'll be in low orbit above Earth, in low orbit, and they'll be able to draw the energy from the sun and literally like a funnel underneath. Imagine these sci-fi things that we've seen.
Yeah.
They'll be able to laser beam it back to Earth and use that as an energy source. If we could ever pull that off, and it's 50, 100, 200, 300 years away maybe, but if we could pull that off, that would be a game changer.
It would, wouldn't it? I tell you what, a couple of minutes before the news, last Saturday, 2007, the phone that changed everything. That's why I said, if you've got an iPhone 1, big clunky old iPhone 1, get it out, have a play. I've got one somewhere.
If you have an iPhone 1, go sell it. It's worth a fortune.
Is it?
If you've got it in the box unopened, it's worth even more.
Oh, yeah.
So the iPhone 1, that's what we were talking about before, you know, with ideas that seem stupid.
It's beforehand, like a boat, everybody wasn't it? Was rolling around.
Everybody was just, it was a step too far. And that's exactly what happened. In fact, Apple had announced the iPhone back at the beginning of that year, but hadn't released it yet. So that was a massive 6-month run up to it on purpose.
Oh yeah,
and it went on sale like today, in 2007. It was, by all the reports, if you go back and you read the old musings from newspapers and pundits and everybody else, complete waste of time. Why are they doing it? It'll never work. Remember, this was before most people had a smartphone.
Well, they had to have a little Nokias. Stylus and all that stuff.
They were using Nokias and they were playing Tetris, and that was about as far as they can go.
Yep.
The internet was not portable. That's the world that we're talking from when these things were written. But really, it got lambasted as being a completely useless, geekified piece of technology.
Why do people do this? People have, you know, some of the greatest inventions ever. Petrol, the wheel,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah. But you know the strange thing about it? That was all of it before it came out. So in that 6 months lead up, it got terrible press. On the day, literally on the day that it got released, it sold 1 million phones in that short period of time.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Phenomenal.
is that curiosity more than anything?
There was enough geeks, nerds and others who thought, I don't care what those pundits are saying and how stupid and ridiculous it may appear to them, I think this thing is going to be sweet. And they bought it.
And here we are, the phone that changed
everything.
I'm going to go and find the old iPhone 1 now. I mean, it would be so interesting to see what's in
it. So you won't be back next week, are you going to sell it?
Morris, take care, man. It's lovely to be back with you. And we'll catch up in a week's time. That's Morris Misalowski, live.